The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 942. It's the 6th of December 2017. On the podcast today, George Franceschedis, Executive Chairman of Alba Mineral Resources, that's ALBA ticker, and George discusses the acquisition of a 49% interest in Gold Mines of Wales. Plus, I also have Charlie Wood, Non-Executive Director of Blenheim Natural Resources, BNR, and Charlie talks about their current investments and strategy. Plus, Andrew Woolwin, CEO of Satellite Solutions Worldwide, SAT, ticker there, explains their recent sales and marketing agreement with the European Broadband Company. I also have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about gold, Bitcoin, Hummingbird Resources, Shanta Gold, and Georgian Mining Corporation. And, as always, I've got the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs, too.
The Vox Markets Podcast, with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is George Franceschedis, Executive Chairman of Alba Mineral Resources, that's ALBA. George, thanks for joining me again.
Good morning, Justin. It's good to speak to you again.
Yeah, and you've had some interesting news out, and we'll get to that in a bit. But before we do, George, for people tuned in now and new to the podcast or a new investor not heard of the company, summarize what Alba's all about, please.
Yeah, sure. Alba Minerals. So we are a mining exploration company listed on AIM, and our primary mining assets are in Greenland. So we have a high-grade ilmenite project in northwest Greenland. We have a high-grade graphite project in southern Greenland. Other than that, we have got some legacy mining assets in Mauritania and Ireland, and a lot of interest, obviously, also on our oil and gas investments. So we have now an 18.1% interest in the Horse Hill oil project in the Weald Basin in Surrey. We've just gone up from 15 to 18.1. So we're clearly established as the second largest holder in that consortium. And separately, we have a 5% interest in Brockham, which we hope will be going back into production next year.
Yeah, and now you've announced the acquisition of interest in gold in the mines of Wales. See, lovely, isn't it?
Oh, I did that just for you, Justin.
I know. It's a very safe jurisdiction. Well, not on a Friday night in certain towns or cities, but where you're looking at. So take us through this, George. What's happening here?
Well, exactly. Well, Dalgethie is actually a very nice town, as you probably know, right in the middle of Snowdonia National Park, or on the edge of it. So it's a lovely part of the world. Now, Clogeye Gold Mine is part of this asset that we've acquired 49% of. So essentially, this is what we'd call in UK parlance, it's an option agreement with the Crown. In sort of normal parlance, people can understand it as akin to a license. So we effectively got an exclusive license, or GMOW, the operator has, with the Crown to explore and develop this part of, which is about 106 square kilometres of ground in North Wales. It incorporates the Clogeye St David's gold mine. Now, that's got a rich and an interesting history. It was a producing gold mine up until the late 1990s. Of the sort of recorded production of the Dalgethie gold belt of around 134,000 ounces, most of that, about 82,000 ounces, has come from Clogeye St David's. So this is the UK's, I guess, premier producer. Mm-hmm. Historically, of gold. We're very excited to have taken, a 49% interest in the project. It's in our backyard. It fits our strategy at Alba. Obviously, Greenland is a little bit further away, but not too far away. But other than that, our oil and gas assets in Surrey, this fits in nicely with our strategy to also be focused on UK opportunities. And clearly, a lot of people tell us, they want production stories. Well, Dalgethie and the Clogeye gold mine in particular was a producer and should and certainly can be a producer again in the near future. So that's our strategy to help the operator with our expertise in exploration and mining to get this back into production.
Yeah, and when you say in the not too distant future, How long are you, predicting? When will this happen? In next year or what?
Well, I mean, I hate to sort of give predictions like that, but look, there's huge potential both on the mine side and all on the exploration ground. We want to do a sort of twin-pronged approach here. So the mine, it's there. I've been underground. There's significant underground development there, which is why I say it's a near-term production story, because it was a producer. It's got significant, as I say, underground development there. We need to go back in. We need to do some basic rehabilitation of the mine. And clearly we need to do some modern, what we'd call modern underground exploration techniques. So this is narrow-veined, nuggety effect gold. And to explain what that means, there are high-grade pockets, or certainly have been historically high-grade pockets, which host bonanza grades of gold running from tens to hundreds of ounces of tons of gold within these pockets. And we need to find these pockets. Clearly that's the strategy, and so what it involves is quite a highly selective mining operation to try and locate and then extract those high grade gold pockets. So that's what we're going to try and do. We're going to get the best minds in the world to turn their thoughts to this, and all the modern mining techniques that have never been employed here. So we're pretty confident that we've got a good chance to find a lot of that remaining high grade, but that remains to be seen. It's clearly a UK onshore environment, just like with our oil assets. There's a planning piece to go through, so that will take a period of time to get planning to reopen the mine. But we're talking about months, and hopefully within a 12-month period, and that's certainly what we'd be targeting. But we'll do some more work on that, some more thinking. We need to start talking with Gold Mines of Wales, who's the operator, to the regulatory authorities, and we'll be giving an update on that once we've done that. So but it is near term. I mean, anything that's within that timescale is to us a near term production opportunity.
Yeah, well, I remember watching a while back. I think it was when Prince Charles got engaged to what's her name? Priscilla then, but Camilla. Sorry,
Camilla. Yes.
And it was saying that he was using Welsh gold, and it was sold and bought at a premium. And I thought, oh, that's lovely. Welsh gold is expensive. And I thought, and that's true, isn't it? It's sold at a premium, isn't it?
Well, it is, and I mean, and that's the other piece of this, Justin. It's that it has a historic and it has a royal connection. So Welsh gold has traditionally, as we've understood it, fetched a premium of 3 to 5 times spot rate of gold. Whereas, actually, having said that, we saw a very interesting piece in a Welsh newspaper the other day that suggested that a chap had sold 2 ounces of gold for 20 times the spot price of gold. So only recently in auction in the UK. So it just goes to show you, it's partly the scarcity value, mm-hmm. but it's also partly the fact that for about 100 years, I think it is, that royal wedding bands have been made out of Welsh gold and particularly clogai gold. So it has got that royal imprimatur, if you like, which is obviously a fantastic thing to be involved with. And we'd like to be able to, for everybody, for all stakeholders, including the Crown, to bring this back into production would be a fantastic thing to have achieved.
Yeah, well, listen, I applaud you, because you've probably saved a couple of jobs there in Wales with that investment. So that it's keeping the local economies going.
Well, I think so. I think it will help a lot. And I mean, I did say, we are, obviously our shareholders want us to make money for the benefit of shareholders, and that is always our focus. But I think it's a good thing to be trying to put investment back into, as I said, UK PLC, where we can and where it's appropriate to do so. I mean, this was a modest acquisition for Alba. We paid no cash. We paid shares. I think we paid a fair price. And for half a previously producing gold mine, effectively. So, I think that's a fairly a modest proposition, really. So I'm happy with that. And Primoris, who sold it to us, they're moving into other things. They've got other focuses. And as they've said, they're very happy to take Alba stock because they see the potential of our suite of assets now. Our oil and gas interests are significant. Projects in Greenland, the ilmenite and the graphite projects really have got significant potential. And obviously now they've given us an opportunity to take this gold mine forward with GMOW. So I think that that's a vote of confidence in us that our counterparties, if you like, we're very happy to take our stock.
Yeah, yeah. Well, listen, you've almost mentioned a couple of reasons there, George, but if anyone's listening right now, I like the fact you've bought into the Welsh gold market there. Obviously, a very higher quality gold than anywhere else in the world. And I'm not being biased there, it's of course. And not yet following the story, George. Give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
Yeah, well, thanks, Justin, for again talking to me today. I mean, look, on gold, everyone likes a gold story, and this is a, as I said, a near-term production story. It's in our backyard, in a safe jurisdiction. It's got a rich and noble history, which we want to bring back into life, and it has got massive potential in terms of this high-grade gold that has historically been produced from Clogeye. So that's certainly the objective there, and not forgetting our significant Greenland assets. And there'll be a lot of work. There is a lot of work ongoing already, and into the next few months there'll be a lot of news flow in terms of our Greenland assets, in particular in the near term on our ilmenite project, our high-grade ilmenite project in northwest Greenland. And thirdly, our oil and gas assets. You know, we've just had planning permission at Horse Hill. We're moving into enhanced flow testing early next year. So, you know, we've got three main asset focuses, if you like, moving into 2018. So it's going to be a busy but exciting year, I think, for ALBA shareholders.
Marvellous. George, good to chat to you. Like you say, a lot going on. So no doubt we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Charlie Wood, Non-Executive Director of Blenheim Natural Resources. That's BNR ticker. Charlie, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
Yes, yeah, nice to get your view of the company, because we've had a couple of other people on from Blenheim. We'll ask some questions and go through some of the progress. Before we do, Charlie, for people not aware of Blenheim, give us a brief summary as to what you're all about and your strategy, please.
Sure, Justin. Yeah. BNR is an AIM-listed investment company. We're focusing on mineral exploration and mining and also technology associated with natural resources. We have a strong cash position currently, approximately 1.8 million in cash and securities. And our particular emphasis is on the future energy space. And I think that's been evidenced by our recent transactions in cobalt, lithium and nickel. And especially, I suppose, we're really focused on backing strong management teams with these resources. This is key, we see, to monetising and maximising value for our investments.
Okay, marvellous stuff. Now, you've upped your interest in the lithium project in West Africa. What does this mean for investors, Charlie?
Yeah, sure. I mean, in a nutshell, it's a closer tie-up and increased our interest into Xantus. It's added two additional licences in Mali and a further four in Niger. And the Mali licence is obviously a particular focus at the moment, given the very encouraging grades coming from Birimian gold and also the encouraging high-grade pegmatites from a Codals project. So obviously our licences there are very close to that project, and we obviously extremely excited about upcoming results from those projects. So it's a very exciting project for us.
Okay. Can you elaborate the on-ground lithium exploration activity updated in the interim accounts announced last week, please?
Yeah, sure. Well, our operational partners are currently active on the ground, working with the identified pegmatite outcropping, and they're doing various sampling and mapping, and as we've said, we expect results on that program in early January. And it's also important to note, I think in Q1 and Q2 you're going to see a real acceleration of news flow from the project as the program really winds up and we move through the drilling phase and hopefully building out a resource there on our projects.
Cool. And the recently announced cobalt project, can you explain the mechanics of this transaction you did?
Yeah, sure. In essence, it comprises a £1.6 million net investment by BNR in stock, and that incorporates taking out the warrant exercise of £1.295 million, which is netted off, plus an £800,000 in-ground expenditure, for a 49% interest. So we see that as a really good entry point into a hugely prospective area neighbouring a world-class cobalt deposit. And I suppose investors should also know that, you know, the warrants are not considered to be a sort of a fleeting commitment by our new partners. This is a long-term transaction. We're aligned very much in the development of the project and also their investment in us. So we see it as a strong position for BNR and a great project and arrangement with our new partners.
Marvellous stuff. And the cobalt project you've conditionally acquired is nearby a large primary cobalt project. Can you explain for people who don't understand the significance of this, please?
Yes, certainly. The new exploration license of Cobalt Blue total nearly 3,000 square kilometres, very highly prospective ground, and they're adjacent to the Nakumuna project, which is evidenced to be one of the largest primary cobalt deposits in the world. It has significant reserves and resources, and it is obviously a very interesting project from the perspective of the nature of our exploration licences which border it. Obviously, the cobalt market is a very hot market currently. It's in significant demand for the uses in the EV market. And obviously, the limitations of supply with nearly 50% of current global supply coming from the Congo. So we see these new projects and these exploration licenses as not only very prospective, but also strategic given their location near this large project.
Excellent. And you know, for people listening up right now, Charlie, what would be the next sort of milestone, next bit of news to expect from Blenheim?
Yeah, I think there's a number of fronts in which there'll be news, Justin. Obviously, we've got results coming from our lithium exploration program on the ground in Mali. We will be moving forward with the developments on cobalt. We have interests in our project in Kalahari, which is also progressing forward. And we're also reviewing a number of other opportunities across the resource and resource technology space.
More stuff. Okay, Charlie, if people are listening right now, like the sector you're in, the area you're chasing here, the new economy that's always got this clean energy, and they like this sector, but they're not yet following the story, could you give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please?
Yeah, certainly. I think, you know, Blenheim has pulled together a really exciting package of investments in a nice portfolio blend of resource plays. And I think it's the beginning of the journey. I think you're coming in at a very good entry point at this price. So I think there's significant upside. I think secondly, significant news flow into Q1 and Q2 of 2018 and for the rest of 2018 and remainder of this year. So that'll be delivering constant updates to shareholders. And lastly, I think just a broader view on the resources space, which I think has come through a tough 4 years and now is moving into a more positive market with commodity prices across the spectrum moving higher. And I think this, with our leverage to the various projects in this space, it's an exciting opportunity.
Marvellous stuff. Charlie, good to chat to you. And like you say, a lot of news forthcoming. So hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future.
Indeed. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Walwin, Chief Executive Officer of Satellite Solutions Worldwide. That's SAT ticker. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Justin, great to be on the show again. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, well, we haven't chatted for a while, but you've had some significant news out, and we'll get to that in a bit. Before we do, Andrew, for people new to the podcast or new to investing, explain what the company's all about, please.
Basically, we supply fast broadband to people who can't get a decent broadband connection. So most of our customers tend to be live in rural environments, speeds of less than 2 meg. We come along either with satellite or a fixed wireless product, get you connected, and basically you're up and running. You can do everything you want. You can stream, watch Netflix, all of that. So it's basically for the people who are stuck in the digital slow lane, we come along and solve their problems.
Do you know what? And it's a lifesaver. It's like, you know, like you said before, it's like a utility now.
It is.
Yeah, because I would not know what to do without it. And it's almost, I remember recently we had a power cut here and I've just finished an interview. And I, for a second, I couldn't get into my head that I didn't have the internet. You know, I kept trying. I thought, oh, hang on. It's like when the electricity goes off and you go to boil the kettle. I thought, I'll have a cup of tea. And you raise it. No, I haven't backed. I haven't got electricity. It's one of those things. You know, you don't know what to do. It's like you're cold turkey. So it is a lifesaver. So this contract here, this new bit of news, it's a commercial agreement with Viasat and Eutelsat, the European broadband joint venture. Explain the significance of this, Andrew, please, if you could.
Well, I'd say it's probably the most significant deal we've ever done in Europe, because it's come along at a perfect time for us. We've been 30 months now as a listed company, and I'd say we're sort of entering our third phase of growth. You know, first phase was before we were listed, 10,000 customers. As we've just said in the release, you know, we went through 100,000 customers earlier this year. And now what we're looking at is the next horizon for us, which is 2020, when a whole new range of satellites goes up and has speeds of 100 meg and unlimited tariffs. But what this comes along at this moment is it's targeting certain countries whereby, you know, there is now a very fast speed of 50 meg. It's taking us in that interim much faster than we've ever seen in any of the European countries before. And it is a really good package. So for people in these territories, it's positive. And I guess the main thing for us is the first time as well that all of our different all the things have come together for us. So talk about sexy new tariffs, you know, customers get faster speeds, unlimited packages. It's also the first time that the hardware is completely supported. The installation is completely supported. So often, historically in the territories that this is happening, you know, there weren't government grants. So now these people aren't having to pay more. They can have it all for free setting up. And the last point is there's quite a substantial amount of marketing money available, and that is giving us the ability to find these customers and tell them about it. So in our industry, we've never had this, you know, all of these sort of points aligned at the same time in these territories. So, you know, it is very, very exciting.
Yeah. So what territories are these in then, Andrew?
So we launched at the beginning of this week on in Norway and in Poland. In a few weeks' time, we go live in Sweden and Finland. And, you know, we're looking at other territories. So it's all about making these first few work quite quickly, and then we'll roll out into other territories where we can offer this offering.
Yeah, and I assume this will benefit, obviously, the bottom line?
It will. I mean, I think the positive thing is going to add customer numbers. You know, it's going to accelerate that. And as with everything, what we're seeing is we get scale that does drop through to the bottom line.
Yeah, yeah. And I know you had targets of 100,000 customers. How's the targets going at the moment?
So we went through that back in last month, so ahead of schedule on that. Mm-hmm. And I think that for us, we've got to have a long, hard think and look now through till 2020 and say what sort of numbers that we're going to do. Because I think we are seeing that organic growth continuing. We see also that we've got a healthy pipeline of other acquisition targets out there. And I think this really gives us a fantastic ending to 2017 and lines it up for a strong position for 2018.
Yeah, you've been very active indeed. And like I said, do you envisage it being as active in 2018?
I certainly do. Yeah, I think, you know, we came to market all that time ago, well, it seems a long time ago, as a roll-up. We've certainly seen us consolidate quite a bit of the European and the Australian marketplace. There are some good targets out there that we want to talk to, we're talking to. So I see it being a very busy 2018, that's for sure.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Well, Andrew, if anyone's listening to this and like the sound of what you're doing, this ambition you have, but they're not yet following the story, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets, please.
I think the main thing is there's a demand for our product. You know, if people live in a rural environment, they want faster broadband. We do everything on broadband nowadays. So they're looking for our product. Every month, we continue to add more customers. The majority of our income is recurring, you know, just like any other telco or utility company that you mentioned. And as we get that scale, as we continue to grow, as been seen by all our previous results, you know, we're seeing better margins and economies flow through.
Excellent stuff. Andrew, good to chat to you. Like you said, you're very busy, so no doubt we'll chat in the not-too-distant future.
Thanks for your support. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, money analyst and partner at SP Angel. You're right, John.
Yes, I'm in good form, thank you.
How was Minds and Money?
Well, the whole conference thing, or the mining conference week in London.
Oh, yeah, yeah, there's a couple of them, isn't there?
Went very well, yes. We were at the one-to-one conference.
Oh, right, yeah, one-to-one, yeah.
There were a lot more investors around, which is good. Mm-hmm. There were a few companies presenting to these guys. They were very busy events, and that was good to see.
Yeah, what interesting discussions did you get? Was there a theme anywhere around? A recurring theme come up? Anything at all?
Well, I managed a couple of panels with fund managers, talking about gold and also talking about metals for electric vehicles. And in both of those panel discussions, the subject of bitcoins came up.
Oh, see, yes.
Yeah, no, and you know they're talking about bitcoins in having taken, you know, sucking funds away from the things that they're doing, taking money away from the gold market, from other precious metals, and just generally distracting investment.
Yeah, well, do you know what? Oddly, I was chatting to Bert Monroe, who is the business development manager for Hummingbird Resources. They're about to be a gold producer start at the end of this year, I think they're starting. But I just said to him, do you know when gold will rally? And I said, when the Bitcoin bubble crashes. Because there is that, you know, it's unregulated, isn't it? It's almost regarded as a safe haven because, you know, there's no central banks involved. But I think at the moment it's now, you know, $12,400 a Bitcoin. It was $1,000 at the start of the year. It's a 12 bagger right there at the start of the year. And, you know, it's going mad. Look at the chart. It's straight up. It's no, you know, curve. It's parabolic. It's crazy. And I'm just thinking, sooner or later, it'll have to come back or collapse in some way. It's going nuts, you know?
I think in the way that ETFs took some money away from physical gold and physical gold trading, mm-hmm. I think Bitcoin is doing something similar. Bitcoin has become the world's 30th largest traded currency. But that's maybe not likely to carry on forever. It just takes somebody hacking into the blockchain technology to unravel all of that really rather suddenly. And remember, people have been buying and selling gold and seeing value in gold for thousands of years. If you have a piece of gold, you can use it for all sorts of things. It's a high technology metal. It's used for dentistry and all manner of uses. Not to mention jewelry, which of course is still a huge source of value and demand for gold. So it's a much more useful thing than an electronic Bitcoin. Although I see that Bitcoin has its place in the world. I'm not convinced that governments and regulators are going to allow Bitcoin to exist forever, and it could just all unravel rather suddenly.
Yeah, the thing is, it's odd. I know a lot of people think that Bitcoin is maybe a bit dodgy-ish, but that's the whole point of its security. There's several ledgers that have to be, you know, agreed before any transaction takes place. That's the blockchain, and so the bigger the chain gets, the more security around it. So, I've heard about this regulation thing, and in fact, in the week, I think the Treasury in the UK was talking about it. So, when they're starting to talk about it, that's when it starts to happen, doesn't it? They start, you know, covering those topics. You know, that's when it may hit. But as far as gold producers, then, what are you thinking of, John? Any, or explorers? What's on your mind? Do you know any?
Well, one of our analysts is down with Shanta Gold this week. I always think there's potential for a re-rating there, particularly now with the Tanzanian government starting to pay back some of the VAT that they owed to these mining companies. And I think the situation there between the government and Barrick Gold and Acacia Mining may start to lighten up for everyone else, which would be a huge relief for everyone operating in Tanzania. But of course, there are other gold companies around. You've got Iron Ridge with their discovery in Chad. That's a bit off the radar of most investors, but it's something to look out for. And there are many other slightly undervalued gold companies out there. You mentioned Hummingbird, but there's a whole raft of junior miners, explorers, and producers that are worth looking at.
Yeah, Chad. I mean, I'm not aware of what goes on in Chad, but it's definitely not a hot spot for investors, is it?
No, it hasn't been. I mean, the Glencore and the oil majors are in there producing oil and exploring for oil. So it does exist in the world of oil and gas, but from a mining perspective, it's been very much undercovered.
Chad, just sounds a bit, you know, out there. Marvellous. And by the way, I've got updates pretty much. I know you covered Georgian mining. It's had a bit of weakness in the share price of late, and it's come back to the placing price. But, I mean, any news around in that camp there, John?
I'm very sorry to see it come back to this level. There is disappointment because they haven't yet signed the joint venture agreement to start mining with their joint venture partner. This was to mine a little bit of oxide gold from the top of the what is a copper ore body underneath. They're still drilling the copper. That's good. We expect that to grow and grow into something really quite large and very valuable. But it would be really nice to see the company heading into production early doors to create that early cash flow. If they can't come to an agreement, then clearly the company is going to have to look at alternatives for funding its exploration program going forward. So we have to. I'm afraid we're in a position where we have to wait. We just have to hope that the two sides, Georgian Mining and their joint venture partner, which owns the Madnuli copper gold mine next door, will come to some sensible arrangement, and that will help the shares to go forwards.
Yeah, marvellous. Well, hopefully they can make a progress there, because it's a decent resource, and I know it's quite a popular stock, so hopefully they can push that forward. We'll have to get Greg on the podcast. He hasn't been on for a while. But
I would encourage investors to hold tight there, because I think this is going to be a sizable copper discovery going forwards, and there's a nice amount of gold on the top to help fund the future exploration and feasibility work, so long as they can start producing from that. And the sooner they start producing from the gold, the better from a cash flow perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Marvellous, John. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again next week, fella.
I look forward to it. Thank you, Justin.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were at 5, Tertiary Minerals, TYM. At 4, Prospect Oil and Gas, BXOG. At 3, United Oil and Gas, UOG. At 2, Valerix, VAL. And at 1, Lions Gold, LION. By the way, Valerix, worth checking out. They've got two data readouts on two assets coming around before the end of the year. And previous results have shown quite positive readout. Worth looking at. And only 2.6 million market cap and convertible loan notes clearing. So a seller about to be leaving. So we could see some positive movement there. Do your own research. They're in the oncology cancer arena, their drugs are. But worth doing some research on, I think. And the best way to do that is add it to your watch list. Just click follow on the page there at Vox Markets, and you'll get their RNSs. Okay, top five most liked RNSs in the Vox Markets in the last 24 hours were at 5, Extract Resources, XTR, coming on the podcast soon. That's Manika Concession Alluvial Goal Update. At 4, UK Oil and Gas Investments, UCOG, Loan Conversion and Completion of Acquisition. At 3, United Oil and Gas, Poder Mare Drilling Results, it's in Italy. At 2, Gritland Gold, GGP, Patterson Project, Positive Gravity and MMI Results. Positive Gravity, eh? And number 1, most liked RNS, was from Prospect Oil and Gas. Same release, pretty much, as UOG, United Oil and Gas. Positive log results at Podere Mare, One Well, Italy. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.